Dr. Phil Hammond. Good morning.
Hi there, how are you doing?
Hi there, good morning. I'm very well indeed, thank you. Dr. Phil, you've taken on Lansley face-to-face. How did that go?
It's very interesting, actually. I mean, politicians often complain that the public treat the NHS like a religion and they don't want to change it. But what's equally interesting is that they come in with a reform programme that's almost like a religious dogma. So there's nothing in the reforms that's been tested by any evidence. What we do as doctors is we're told all the drugs we prescribe and treatments we give have to be tested and proved by evidence. And the trouble with political reform is that nobody evaluates it and says, yes, this might work. So it is a huge leap of faith. And I think the difficulty for all NHS staff, and it's not just doctors, it's right the way down to the lowly porter, is A, they don't understand it, as you don't understand it. B, we were promised no major reorganisation of the NHS before the election. And as these reforms came in, the chief executive of the NHS, David Nicholson, said the reforms were so big you could see them from space. So these are the biggest reforms ever. Having been promised before the election, there'd be no reforms. And even the chair of the NHS Commissioning Board, Malcolm Grant, who's the chair of the new Quango that'll run the NHS, described the health bill as unintelligible. And I think that's really why the public isn't engaged with the debate. If you actually tried to read the health and social care bill, you'd give up the will to live after about 10 pages. It's gone through hundreds and hundreds of amendments to try to get it through, and that suggests you're probably better off without it. If a programme has to have so many hundreds, it may even go into the thousands of amendments to get it through. It suggests it was poorly thought out in the first place. But my biggest issue with it is the idea of clinical staff and frontline staff getting involved in commissioning is a good thing. Of course the NHS needs to change, and the people who oppose the bill aren't opposing change. What they're saying is that all this could have been done through the existing structures. We had PCTs and strategic health authorities. We could have put doctors and nurses on those boards and give them responsibility for commissioning without this huge structural upheaval, which nobody understands, at a time when we've got to make £20 billion worth of savings, something that's never been done. Now, if you were running a company and you were told you had to make massive savings, the last thing you'd do is huge structural reform. You might slim down your existing structure, but you wouldn't do two at the same time. And even the Health Select Committee, which is chaired by Stephen Dorrell, a former Conservative Health Secretary, is saying the reforms are mucking this up. So I think if even people on the inside within the Tory party are saying, God, this is really not the right time to be doing this, we've united just about everyone in the NHS, which is extraordinarily rare, you ought to pause for thought. But I think the difficulty for Lansley is if he's swum up a salmon trap. He's gone so far up now, it's become a vanity project. He can't turn around. Cameron can't turn around and say, we can't do this. They call him Broken Arrow, Lansley. He doesn't work, he can't be fired. And I think that's the issue with it. They've gone too far, and it's all about, as politics often is, it's about winning the argument rather than doing what's best for the NHS. So I'm not saying the NHS doesn't need to change. You look at what happened in Mid-Staffordshire, the way we treat the elderly, of course it needs to change. It needs to focus on quality and safety and listening to patients. But I think, ironically, even though Andrew Lansley didn't intend this, the health bill will take the focus off the front line in caring for patients with a huge bureaucratic mess that nobody understands.
So how do we change the NHS, Phil? Because it has become much more than it ever was before. Can we afford to keep going down this route?
No, I think we absolutely need the NHS. We should absolutely cherish and love it, but of course it's not perfect. And it was interesting that you said initially, what can we do for the NHS? And, you know, aside from the debates about whether we should pay for more separate things, the first thing we have to do is keep ourselves as fit and healthy as possible, because no health service in the world can cope with a tsunami of chronic disease, of obesity, of smoking, of alcoholism. Every health system in the world is struggling with that. And we know that about 60-70% of the resource we spend in the NHS, after the stuff we spend on salaries, the stuff we spend on services, that goes on the management of chronic diseases. So these are people who are often have diabetes, maybe they're carrying a bit of weight, maybe they're smokers. If we could make a few percentage point savings in the management of that by getting people to exercise more and to stop smoking and to do all the boring stuff that we know is important, then we could afford the NHS. I think the difficulty is we're making so many demands. Yes, we're living longer, but if we live longer and healthier, it'd be fine. So that's my first point, is that you want to save the NHS, you save yourself first. First thing I do every morning when I'm at home is get out and walk the dogs, and it's the best, most wonderful thing. It's great for your mind because you're out in the green open spaces up on the Mendips. It's great for your body. We need to make time in our lives to take the stairs instead of the bus, to cycle to work instead of the car. And that's, I think, the fundamental thing that has to happen to save the NHS more than anything. In terms of the debates on what we spend the money on, well, I think we need organisations like NICE, the National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence, which looks at new drugs and treatments and says this is what the NHS can afford. And it's interesting, although NICE gets a lot of bad headlines, most NHS staff agree that there has to be an independent organisation that says, look, this new drug for cancer, it might work for a few people and prolong a few lives, but actually it's too expensive. and it needs that organisation with patients inputting into it to tell us what we can afford. And I think if you have those two things, the NHS actually has quite a rosy future. What it doesn't want is all this continuous structural change where I don't know who my boss is now. I don't understand who's in charge of the clinical commissioning groups. I don't know what a clinical senate is. I don't know who's going to be the NHS commissioning board. I don't understand anything. And I'm supposed to be informed. So what patients make of all this is beyond me.
Is there a suggestion at all with medical staff being in charge of big budgets and making clinical decisions based on money, on expenditure? Is there any suggestion that therefore itself could lead to issues of, I don't know, corruption even, that the idea that some service may go and take a doctor out for dinner and say, look, use us first, and that's not in the nature of the NHS?
There are always vested interests in healthcare, and ultimately you have to trust someone. There has always been the issue of, you know, pharmaceutical companies coming around and trying to get doctors to prescribe their drugs. I'm given financial targets for hitting certain vaccination levels or cervical screening levels. So you could argue there's a vested interest in me encouraging you to have certain treatments when you don't want to, because there's a financial incentive for me to treat that way. I mean, there are always those incentives there. And yes, ultimately you have to trust people to act in your best interest. And if you ask informed questions and you suspect they're not, then you go and get another opinion. So I think that conflict is always going to be there. But my issue really with these reforms is we need doctors and really good managers to work in partnership. Doctors can't do this all. I wasn't trained to do commissioning. I can get together and decide how I think a better diabetes service would be run, but I need the best of the NHS managers who understand.
But will you be looking at cost rather than care?
We always look at cost. I mean, that's what NICE does. That's what NICE has imposed on us. We already have that. NICE tells us if somebody has high blood pressure, you should try these drugs first. Only if those drugs first, you try the more expensive drugs. I mean, we already have that, and that will become even more explicit. And in a way, that's what we should be thinking. When I prescribe a drug as a GP, I should be thinking, is it the best value for money that I can get for the NHS, as well as, is this the best treatment for my patient? I don't think that's an issue. I think you can't ignore money. You know, GPs can't wash their hands of it and say, actually, the money's for the managers to sort out. It's always there in the consulting room, but we must do it in an open, accountable way that patients can understand. And although Lansley said that the purpose of the health bill was no decision about you without you, I've yet to meet a patient who can explain it to me.
Dr. Phil, thank you very much indeed. Dr. Phil Hammond there. And of course, you can hear Dr. Phil right here on BBC Radio Bristol, Saturday mornings from 9 until 12 with his Saturday surgery.